sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Facebook's going to 15. According to Barron's, at least, oil tumbling 7% last week, and stocks struggled to keep that rally going. We also have Scott O'Neill on the show today as our guest, good friend, great mind when it comes to investing from MarketSmith, and we have lots to discuss. Big week coming up on episode number 281 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there, Andrew Horowitz here, and I hope you are doing well. It is the final week, the final push into the month of September, and all that volatility that everybody had feared. Remember that? We said that there was all these guys talking about, whoa, September is the worst month of the year, and this is historically and all that. You know what? It's a great grab for the media, but you know, you have to pay much more attention to the trend when you have the opportunity, because the fact of the matter is, as anybody says, you know, it's only price that pays. The trend is your friend or your enemy, depending on how you fight it. Don't fight the Fed. All these things we can kind of bring into summation about what happened in the month of September. But we did see oil, interestingly, tumbling about 7%. And when they were talking about how, all this Mideast unrest and all the problems that we're seeing and the supply issues and the demand. First of all, we did see, and we do know, that demand has been waning. We see not only from a domestic standpoint, but also internationally. We all see that we're doing a lot better over here in the United States, digging up that good old black gold. And what's happening is that we see the demand is dropping, supplies are staying relatively stable. And then Saudi Arabia comes in and says, you know what? Hey, we'll make sure to keep pumping. So all this kind of combined after a big run because of the QE3, or now they're calling it QEfinity, and then kissed $100 about two or three times and then came right back down. And this is something you need to watch, because the commodities took that knee-jerk move over the last several weeks. And then at the QE3 announcement, and what happened was, it was only short-lived. As I guess Muhammad Al-Aryan would say, it was a sugar high. So you need to keep that in mind when it comes to the commodities here, because it really is supply-demand that's the big issue that's going to keep things going. And that goes for stocks as well. You know, the market is really just a gigantic supply-demand mechanism. So stocks, you know, really last week had a kind of a trouble. They were trying to push up. They came back a little bit. They tried to push up. And even on what I would say was questionable earnings for companies, Adobe came out with a number that, when I first saw the headline, I said, I need to check that, because it was far below expectations. And not only that, their outlook was really ugly. Now, one of the things that we talked about on DH Unplugged last week was the whole idea that Adobe may fall short in the near term because they changed their overall model from a software purchase model to more of a subscription-based model. And that could hurt them. And especially if you think about someone who's going to buy a product today that's, let's say, just $1,000, and they'll use it for the next, you know, year until the next product line comes out or whatever. But instead of doing that, they're going to pay $100 a month for the next year. So you may see a difference in how they're accounting for things, and that's why the stock initially went down about 8% right after the number came out. But then it came back and actually finished that day up about 3% higher, which was still a surprise to me, because their outlook, and if you looked at the earnings themselves and the revenue numbers, were very unimpressive. Well, they moved up a little bit the next day, but then they came down about 2.5% the next day after that. And then we saw Oracle's numbers came out. Now, Oracle had been moving up very nicely into their earnings announcement over the last several weeks. I mean, just like every other stock has, right? And what happened? Their earnings come out, and they see about a 4 or 5% decline after the close, after the close of the announcement and after hours. And then all of a sudden, they start to, you know, slowly climb. But I will tell you, I was very unimpressed with Oracle's numbers. Now, when you put that together with what they talked about hardware being a little bit, the sales slowing there, some headwinds from this, and I said, you know, that's not something I'm going to bite on. As a matter of fact, on Friday, when it peaked out in the morning at about, I guess about 10 o'clock, it peaked out about up 3%, 3.5%. I said, you know what, that's looking like a good potential quick short. And we did that, actually. We made about, 1.5%, 2% on real quickly within an hour or so, closed the position. But I got to tell you something. You know, sometimes you can do that and pick up a couple of bucks here and there for your portfolio. There's nothing wrong with it as long as you have some very good stops on. But one of the things that was really surprising was, you know, how I looked at it and I said, boy, you know, this market's just buying everything and they don't really care if numbers are bad, numbers are good. It's just like, you know, if it's down, I'll push it up. And if it's up, I'll push it down. Now, that's not going to last forever. There's going to be a point that the euphoria and the last in kind of get, you know, kind of disgusted with the whole situation. But then that's going to happen on the top and on the bottom, both sides. And one of the things we look at is, okay, what is the sentiment? What is the overheating and what is the oversold measures? And last week, I told you that, you know, one of the things we noticed was that the key reversal indicator that we have that we've been putting together for some time and tweaking, making sure it's really on, it pinned out. It went all the way to our highest reading we've seen in a very long time, meaning that you have a very overheated market last week on about Thursday or Friday. So we came in and we actually picked up some hedges in the portfolio. The key reversal indicator came in and leveled off back to equilibrium on Thursday, cut those, and that was good because, you know, generally the market was up most of the day. Of course, the last half hour or so came down, but on Friday. But nonetheless, you have a lot of still very elevated levels for the Spearman indicator. You know, you still probably have a little bit of some froth in your McClellan, your put call. I'm going to put up a chart that combines the Spearman, the trend stall indicator from Bloomberg, as well as they have a candle sessions counter, which is kind of interesting because the Asian countries use this a lot. And it looks at 8 and 10 and 13 directional moves on a bar. So it's daily or by the minute or whatever it is. It's interesting to look at. I don't know what you could really take from it, but I put some educational points about what it's all about and what it's used as and how it is interpreted. I'll have that up this week, probably Monday morning or so. We'll have the Spearman and show you how it's kind of rolling over, and that's usually a questionable time. I want to mention a few things and then get into some of the other topics of the day. You know, as we did last year, it's about that time again. And if you can hear it, you hear the Oompa Loompas and the bands and the various, the steins clicking. It's Oktoberfest. So what do? We do Stocktoberfest, of course. And what I'm going to ask you to do is go over to the Disciplined Investor this week. We'll have a post up probably late Monday. And it will ask you your name and your email and give us a stock or two. And we will analyze it this month. We will put up our full analysis of that stock for you. You get a kind of a personal service on the website, one per day, depending on how many we have. Last year, we had so many that we did actually two per day. But we'll have your stocks. Now, here's a couple of things I want to ask you. Don't give me some really far out, thinly traded penny stocks. We're going to throw it out. We're not going to use it. We can't do anything with it. Don't give me some crazy stock that just doesn't trade or an international stock, because usually the fundamentals are much different and the calculations of their that we use to do some of our things don't work out as well. So beyond that, have at it. So one or two stocks, and what we'll do is we'll put your name and the link to that so you get some credit for that. Just your first name, of course, just like we did last year, and it was a lot of fun. And we'll talk about those on each of the week's podcasts throughout the month of October. So very simply, just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. If it's not there right when you hear this, it will be there. It will be on the top. We'll make sure it stays there. We'll say, you know, here's a little form. Put in your information. Put in your stock symbol. And then in October, Oktoberfest comes. And here we go. We'll do the Stocktoberfest review that we did. I thought it was a lot of fun. The one thing I don't like about this is that it seems that StockTwits decided to take the name Stocktoberfest last month. Harold Lindzen said, hey, we're going to do this great thing called Stocktoberfest. And I'm thinking, Didn't you want to find out if somebody did that before? Now, I hope I'm not stepping on anybody's toes. I didn't hear about it before. I didn't know about it. I thought we made it up. But maybe he thought he made it up too. Who knows? All right, what else do we got here? Green Mountain Coffee Roasters. I got to tell you something. You know, sometimes it's good to be smart. Sometimes it's good to be lucky. The last two times that we went short and alerted through Trigger Point Research, Green Mountain Coffee Roasters, the next day, on both occasions, the next day, Starbucks had a major announcement. Now, the first time we shorted, I think we made like 25% in a matter of 2 days. Because they came out with the announcement they're going to have that single cup brewer, and this was like a big hoo-ha with Green Mountain, and oh boy. We shorted and put out an alert on, I think it was Wednesday. And I think Thursday the announcement came out that Starbucks is lowering their price on theirs and coming out with a new product on a single cup, and had a big conference about it on CNBC and all over, talking about how they're really getting into this business. Oh, man. So it was like a quick 10% or so on it. We actually cut the position on Friday for a two-day gain of 10%. So that was kind of good. We did it for our portfolios for clients, and we also did it for Trigger Point Research. Sometimes we use the same research to find things. But I thought that was really interesting what was going on there. And Green Mountain is still a real big question. The other stock that I want to mention to you is JCPenney. Now, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think I mentioned to you that after the earnings came out, how the stock was going up, and I said, you know, none of the outlook from what the management said was impressive. They, you know, this big hype about all these big hedge funds getting involved in JCPenney was great. A lot of underlying bid that would be there. But Ron Johnson just has not been doing anything. And they came out with a big announcement about some of their mid-quarter numbers and the outlook, and everybody's getting all excited. The stock is moving up like 6, 7, 8, 9% and all that. And then they hit you with the but. The stock caved. Stock was straight up and then came down the next day. I think it came down about 8%. So, I mean, you're talking about close to a 14% round trip on that. And there was a lot of that last week. There was a lot of really interesting things that went on. I got to tell you, there was a couple of stocks. One that we had, Questcore, that we've had before, and we had a small position in that. And boy, that thing just rocked when a short seller came out and said, you know, well, they're not going to be able to do this one product to this one particular insurance company, and you know, stock drops like I think it was like 48% during the day. We got out of it a little bit earlier, but still, you know, you take in 2 minutes, the thing is down 25%. What do you do about something like that? You know, you got a couple of different ways to deal with it. First, you just, you know, you say, you know what, I'm not waiting around. And then the other thing is, you know, you buy in hopefully when it's a lot lower because it's overdone. Oftentimes that whole fear and greed combination, you know, once you're really scared and really worried, that's usually a good time to do something. Like, for example, the other indicator that we get, which is called the magazine indicator. Now, Facebook at $15, which is what, right on the front, smack on the front page, big print on Barron's this weekend. Oh, they're talking about the mobile and the this and the that. No, I'm not debating it. I just think it's really interesting and kind of late. There was a lot of time between all the different downgrades and what happened with the whole debacle and all that to come up with something. And I got to tell you something. I've told you this before. I've kind of lost a little respect for Barron's. They're really obviously hurting for subscriptions or something because they're really getting into the whole, I guess it would be publicity side and the big news side to get everybody all trouble to buy magazines or their publication. So I don't know. We'll see what Facebook does. I'm sure it's not going to do very well in the first part of the week on that because people get spooked. But there was a lot of bid over the last several weeks with Facebook, a couple of days of it up 7 or 8%. And you know, it looks like they were leveling off after Zuckerberg came out and finally made some good comments. And they were seemingly getting their heads together about the whole mobile advertising platform, did some decent maneuvering, some decent talking. So we'll see what happens with that. I want to talk about next week's Eco. Last week's Eco, there was nothing there. Manufacturing still looked really lousy, but we do have... The Philly came out. That wasn't so bad. We have the Empire Manufacturing coming out on Monday. We also have a big week. We have building permits, housing starts. We also have the Philly Fed. That was last week, of course. That was all last week. And that was actually kind of good. You know, I didn't think there was anything really that was that troubling. about the housing and all that, and that was really nice to see. This week, you know, there we have the some final numbers from on confidence. We have also the Conference Board confidence, Case-Shiller coming out, and there's a lot of things coming out this week that could be very disconcerting for markets. One of the things that happened over the weekend was that we got a little bit of a flare-up over in Europe again, and Iran's making all sorts of noise. We also have the situation in China and Japan. It's like we seem to be the happy family over here, and everybody else is kind of pissed off at each other around the world. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it is what it is. We do have a guest coming up. I want to mention that next week we have David Wessel. He wrote the book Red Ink, Inside the High Stakes Politics of the Federal Budget, and where the trillions come from, where they go, and what inaction imperils our future. There's actually a book they sent me that was due to the fact that a listener wrote in and said that this would be a good guy to interview. So if you have any ideas, of course, just send it to me and we'll see if we can get them on. I mean, you know, find out opinion from people, and, you know, if we don't buy it, we'll beat them up on it. The other things I want to mention to you, a couple other things here. We have the VIX. JP Morgan put out a great piece last week on the VIX saying there is a real problem on the VIX. I mean, we saw it up a little bit last week, but very little. But, you know, considering all the things that are going on around the world and all the things that are potentially happening with the election and the fiscal cliff and China and Japan, like all the things we talked about, the VIX is, you know, at 14. I mean, give me a break here. It is a little bit out of whack a little bit, and there's something that may be adjusting shortly. So just keep your eyes on the VIX and all that's going on there. And you know, keep in mind that you have to be, you know, that moves fast. And when it moves, it's usually a little bit, you know, quicker than you think. So if you see that inching up, maybe plot that and watch that daily, you know, and then consider the charts we're going to put out up about the Spearman and the trend stall. And maybe it's time just to kind of observe for a little while what's going on, not get all, you know, panicked to be buying or selling right now. You know, just observe what's happening, observe the trends, and let's see if we're going to be able to hold up. Bond yields came up dramatically on treasuries last week, which was very interesting to see. A lot of selling going on there. We had the potential downgrade. We had the downgrade from from Moody's. We had the downgrade from Egan-Jones on the U.S. debt. So, you know, nobody cares a lot about all the things that are going on. But eventually, trust me, I've been doing this a while. Eventually, they will. So just consider that. Last thing I think I want to mention is that I'm going to be on Frank Curzio's podcast this coming week. It's his 150th show, and he invited three guests that I think that he really likes, and I'm one of them. I'll be on the show, and I wanted to mention that they're also doing over at Stansberry Radio, they're doing a little snippet, a two-minute discussion on a regular basis. I don't think it's daily. I think it's weekly. They're going to do a two-minute picking of various audio from podcasts that are out there that really had something to say. And we were actually on that last week. I'll put that link up on our site as well. I think it's up on Sunday. We had it on Sunday Fun. So it'd be interesting to listen to that. I think it's a nice little thing they're doing there. So, you know, and I love Frank. You know, that's where that's going. Anyway, let's start talking with this. I actually recorded this a couple of days ago. So let's get on with Scott O'Neill. And our special guest today, Scott O'Neill. You know, he's a good friend of mine. We shared some wonderful stone crabs together not too long ago. He's the president of MarketSmith, and we're going to talk a little bit about MarketSmith because it's an unbelievable product for, I guess the best way to describe it is to combine the fundamental and the technicals kind of in one place in an easy to understand. I'll put a screenshot of it on the website. On this show notes here, but it's fabulous, especially on the iPad. I love it on the iPad. Scott, how you doing?
Hi, great, Andrew. So, thanks for that intro.
No, it's true. It's true. I use it.
It is true.
So listen, and keep on making adjustments to it and benefits. It's just unbelievable. Now, let me ask you a few things. You know, we've been on and talking in the past about different trends of the market. Big thing that you always follow is, you know, you have to be a very close watcher of the trends, not only for individual stocks, but for the markets, because, you know, markets dictate the overall. And even though there are all these headwinds, you and I just a little while ago talked about how it's hard to ignore them, but what is the best advice you can give people when they're kind of seeing that, oh, U.S. is downgraded, or, you know, that there's going to be a major commotion in Japan and China over this or that? I mean, what is the kind of advice that you can give out?
That's really a great question, Andrew, because I'm being asked that, and really it's very simple. Forget the whys. Focus on the what. Because if you get caught up in the why is this happening? What if Israel attacks Iran? What if this? And all of that stuff, it's going to twist you up, and in the end, you'll get scared out of a position or two. The what is the chart. Go back to the chart, because what is a chart? It's the price and volume of the indexes and individual stocks. And you could see over the last 3-4 weeks, institutional accumulation, institutional buying has been going on. And we've had a terrible, first quarter was good, and then the whole year was lousy. The summer was pretty bad and choppy. And all of a sudden, it's much more uniform. And you can see it right away on the chart. And that's what leads us into the market. And as we're making progress, we will wade in deeper.
Yes, because I know that a lot of times you tweet, you're like, listen, it looked like a good day in the beginnings of a trend. It looked like a good day, but don't just, barrel in, two-fisted on everything. Wait for the proper signals, and you have a variety of different things to look at. But wait for the proper signals of a chart. Let the chart tell you what to do versus the other way around. I think that's a good explanation, right?
Yes, absolutely. And remember, discipline is very big to us.
Yeah.
Discipline and patience.
Now, one of the things you have, I know, is, you look at levels to get in, let's say a breakout of X pattern, whatever it may be. But then you also have a stop somewhere in the 8-ish% range. Now, with the kind of volatility, even though the VIX is low, but the volatility we've seen in stocks, where you can see a pretty big whipsaw throughout the day, any given day, how do you manage those stops?
That's an interesting question. We've done historical analysis that if you buy a stock right, at a proper pivot point as it's emerging from a consolidation area, very rarely will it ever go down 8% from that proper buy point. The key is, are you picking that up on the chart? And that point is where you have your lowest risk and highest probability of success. And as it emerges, you get some volume. Those are the big players, and they're buying it. For instance, today Monsanto broke out. And it was on decent volume in the morning. I actually I bought some this morning. As an example, go back and look at that daily chart for today on Monsanto, and that'll give you the idea. When the stock does that, it very rarely will come back all the way down 8%.
Now, let's talk about the next stage, though. So now a stock, any stock, moves up. It does its thing, and it moves up, and it gets to either, let's say, another buy point for some reason, pass through another resistance zone or another pattern, and okay, you add to it, let's say, at that point, and okay, now you're cruising along and you're doing your thing. When do you stop out of it at that point? Because now, of course, let's just say you're up, I'm just taking a number, 12%. So now you're up 12%, you bought at the right point, okay, it went up, you bought a little bit more into it, so now you got a position, and now it's starting to sag a little bit. Okay, fine, you can live with that a little bit, but now you have a different level, right? Because now, are you going to wait for it to come all the way back down to that pivot point, the original one, or is there some other technique where you may, move out like you would, how you would pyramid in? Would you kind of reverse the pyramid?
Yes. The 8% really is from the initial consolidation area that you're using as your foundation for the stock to bounce from. Once you're up, that we use in our shop a whole series of sell rules. For instance, in your scenario, a lot of stocks will go up 20-25% from a consolidation area and then consolidate again. And if they're really sound and sales and earnings are strong and continue to be strong, and a lot of the other fundamental factors are intact, then it will probably go up another 20-25% and consolidate. And that's how stocks historically react. Now, some of the more powerful ones may go up 40%. And the rare ones might go up even 100%, but generally speaking, most stocks will go up 20-25%. So one might consider locking down profits when you enter that zone with, say, 2/3 of the stocks in your portfolio. That's one way. The other is if you have a really powerful stock that really looks like you think it's going to go a lot further, we have different sell rules You'd have to refer to my father, Bill O'Neill's book. There's, I think, 3 or 4 pages on cell rules. There's a lot of them. But we handle it based on rules. That way we're not guessing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's important. A lot of guessing going on out there because, you know, there's a lot of questions. But now, you know, one of the things that I think is really cool about MarketSmith, and for those of you that I'm going to try to like give you a little bit of a picture about this, and I'm going to kind of talk about it from the perspective of, let's say, the iPad. You could do it online, whatever. But what's really interesting is that you also, some time ago, added a pattern recognition tool where actually you could show the most powerful patterns, whether it's a double bottom breakout, whether it's a cup and handle breakout, whether, you know, with a high handle with this, whatever. That will be drawn and shown right on the chart.
Yes.
That's cool.
Now, it's a great tool, and it actually is significantly more sophisticated than it looked to create it. We had to get quite a few technical people and a mathematician to figure all the algos out and get it. The one thing I would mention is it's a fabulous tool to train your eye and speed up the learning curve. But you don't want it to become a crutch where... Right. You know, down the road, you're dependent on it because ultimately we have to catch our own fish. And so I use it. Well, it's true, right?
Right. No, I hear you.
Yeah. What do they say? Fish or cut bait?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I will use it after I see something. I'll turn it on because it gives me all the stats on that consolidation area. And so I don't have to sit there with a calculator and figure it all out. But it is a fabulous tool.
Yeah, that's good stuff, and how it's easily laid out. So when we talk about the most powerful rallies, like, you know, that we see, they're oftentimes very forgiving, you know, of a stock's misstep, because of course we know that, or at least we believe that the markets in general are a barometer, and they sometimes say they're the best economic monitor as well to look out to the future rather than looking at, you know, jobs numbers and housing numbers and all that. Because the markets are what will actually react to that information or ahead of that information, possibly.
We agree with that. Yeah, for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, it could be a lot of different reasons. You know, I mean, if you see, for example, you're like in the depths of a horrible situation and markets start moving up, you may say at first, well, you know what, it's just a dead cat bounce and all that. But, you know, if you see that continuing, breaking out and you know, the volume picking up, well, you may have a total change of trend going on. One of the things that's noticeable about, I think, this year is that, compared to, let's say, last year, that any of the quote-unquote corrections or consolidations market-wise have been very shallow. Don't you think this year, in 2012?
Oh, more recently. You know, I had a great first quarter going, and I went great guns into March and the very beginning of April when I finally threw in the towel, and I ended up giving back 2/3 of those gains.
Right.
Then through summer was really choppy. But more recently, yeah. Now, are you talking in a broader context of the indexes or individual stocks?
No, I'm talking about the indexes, because that's, you know, a lot of times when we talk about markets being in correction or markets being in an uptrend or markets being under pressure or whatever it may be with distribution days and all these good things that are out there, you know, it seems like the big picture this year has been kind of, well, actually, it's been, if you look at it, from the big rally that we saw recently, it really occurred on about 4 or 5 different days. You know, we had this 4 or 5 days down and then one giant day up. 4 down days and then one giant day up. But more importantly, if you actually look at the numbers, if you take out the 4, I think it's the 4 big days. I was just reading this research from J.P. Morgan. If you take out the 4 big days that we had, the Draghi speech, the Fed QE, the other Draghi speech, and then something else, those 4 days accounted for like 100 points on the S&P. You know, without those, it would be flat. Now, there was a lot of action in between of individual stocks, of course, that was different. All I'm saying is it just seems that this year, for some reason, compared to clearly last year you had kind of the move up and then, you know, a pretty deep correction for markets and stocks, for that matter. This year, it seems to be a little bit less, although some stocks corrected, like the coals and the steels and the materials really got hammered, right? You know, but this year has been kind of a little bit more, you know, placid, don't you think?
Well, you know, that's their research, and I'm kind of looking at it a little bit differently, or at least our method of operating is different. We're basically a growth shop, and when I see the indexes faltering, for instance, I'm probably not in. And if the index is up strong one day out of the blue, I'm not in. It's got to show me a trend developing. And if it is building, then I start wading in carefully. And so I'm sure the research is right. I'm just looking at it a little differently.
Yeah.
I kind of simplify it. Okay, now we're in a confirmed uptrend, and of course, the beginning of a confirmed uptrend, it's a little tricky. It gets kind of choppy and dicey, and that's why you plungers die at this, as you know. We incrementally wade in,
right.
And as we're getting traction, we add to positions because the market loves plungers. And if I'm getting traction, as I am now, I will continue feeding more and more in. And so that's kind of how we look at it.
Mm-hmm. So, but the one thing that I noticed, we have a variety of different screens, like you have there too, okay? But a variety of different screens for different methods. Some are, you know, heavy growth, let's say, whatever it is, okay? What I noticed I thought was really interesting was on some of the really ugly days, the growth stocks didn't take that big of a hit.
Yes.
And I was like, that's interesting. And what is that telling me there? You know, that's an interesting sign. You noticed that too, right?
Yeah, more recently.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I found that to be that obviously there was a clear, I don't want to call it rotation, but an appetite that was building.
We're labeling that a personality change. You can see that the market has changed its personality, and it really occurred, in my opinion, back when the NASDAQ pushed through the 3,000 level, and that was right around August time,
right?
And the S&P pushed up, and it was they got over the 1420 area. They kept there were many failed attempts, and you could just sense that stocks started to firm up price wise on the chart, and they're starting to work. Now I would preface that though. With you still have to be laser on your entry points. You've really got to be accurate because, man, they dress down stocks fast. And if you're buying something extended, like right now, a lot of stocks are extended a little bit.
Yeah.
You got to be really careful. But it does seem like the opportunity is there for us.
Now, I want to take a stock as an example, and maybe you can pull this up. I have a picture of it embedded in my head, okay? Stock called SolarWinds, SWI is the symbol. Now, SolarWinds is a stock that I've been following for a long time. It was a small company that was trying to compete with the bigger companies for network efficiency and a variety of other things in the tech space. And when I first bought it a couple of years back, it did well for a little while, then just absolutely, you know, we moved out of it and just went straight down. It was ugly. You remember that?
Yeah.
And it was a very deep move. And then it kind of, you know, crept up a little bit there, did its thing and all that. And then it had a couple of good earnings releases and things looked a lot better for the company. And the stock went vertical. Okay. And then it kind of, slowed down a little bit and consolidated a little bit. And then, boom, went up again. I think I could envision, I don't have the chart in front of me, but I think I envisioned two specific days or maybe even weeks that were those vertical moves, a little bit of consolidation across, and then another vertical move. I could not find a viable entry point. Maybe it was me. And we've been sitting on when should we get into that? Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Was there a viable entry point? Because I mean, obviously it's passed. I bought it and had a nice return on it, but is there something that you saw there that, I don't know if you're in that stock or anything or like
no,
it?
No, I'm not. We have it on our institutional recommend list as one of many, but I have a couple colleagues that I think are in it. You're basically right. There is not a clean entry. It's rare that you don't get a clean entry and then all of a sudden it catapults with monster volume and shoots up like you're saying, which is true. We're not momentum players where we just buy some big volume price moving stock. There are what we'd call alternative buy points, which is code for it's not perfect. But you could get in there, but your risk is a tiny bit higher than if you did have a clean entry.
Right.
And one of them would have been before that, or right at that first, well, that up, first up thrust gapped up. So, yeah, you're kind of stuck. So I take that back. That isn't clean.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Second, see, I'm looking at a weekly chart and it looks okay. But then when you go to reality on the daily, you go, no, that's one of those that shot out of the pocket. And same for the second one. And also, to further your point, you can't call it a bounce off the 50-day moving average because it breaches the 50-day all over the place.
Yep.
So
yep.
You can't use that as a benchmark. No, you're right. This is a tricky one. But I will tell you, it's clearly under accumulation as long as earnings don't slow down too dramatically. And right now, it's forming a 3-week tight pattern,
mm-hmm.
very, very tight, at the 60 range, which is at the top end of where it's an all-time high. That is very constructive. That means you've come up from around, 42 or so, and you've gone up to 60, and you're consolidating all of that.
Right.
And so that's a bullish sign for this. Plus, you've got a lot of good upward volume. So, yeah, I don't own it. I didn't get it. But it looks good.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it looks good. It looks like I would like to have it. Now let's talk about a different situation where you have a stock that is you have a 3-week tight pattern, which is great. The 50-day moving average that you talk about. Now this is interesting. There's two types of 50-day three types of 50-day moving averages. I'll call it okay. So you have a 10-week average, which is the quasi equivalent, which could be similar or not similar to the actual 50-day, but it's close enough for things right there, and it will lay out the same way, or it should. The 50-day moving average, do you make a differential between if the 50-day moving average is in an upslope or a downslope if it bounces on it?
Yes. I top of my head, I can't recall when I bought a bounce in a down slope. We want to buy strength because in the stock market, if you get the market overall environment right, strength begets strength.
Right.
And so your probability is significantly higher when you're buying into an uptrend. And when it's in a downtrend, I don't think I can't remember any example. Maybe there's one. But no, it's an uptrend and it comes down. This is a great method for those out there that want to add to a position. My batting average is lower on initiating a position that's a bounce off the 50, but I've done it and made it work. But the simple fact is this is a key level moving average that the institutions follow and react to. And since they're the big players in the game, we pay attention to it, and we want to ride along with them if we can.
And I think what's important to notice here is that we talk about institutions a lot when I talk with you, and that's obviously important because, you know, what why not ride the coattails if they're doing one thing or the other? But what's really interesting is the importance of the 50-day moving average is not, I'm going to say this, and you can argue it or agree, it's not that it's the 50-day moving average that means anything. It's just a level. The institutions have made a demarcation point that they're holding a stock and they say, you know what, we're looking to add to it. And if it falls to that level, automatically we're going to be, not always automatically, but automatically that's a level we'll start adding to. And we will, you know, hold it there. And until it breaches that in a significant way, you know, we will continue to add to it. And that's where you get the strength, right?
That's it.
Yeah, it's
that's
simple.
That's it, 100%. That's
right.
It.
It doesn't mean the 50-day moving average. By the way, it's really important. The 50-day moving average, the 30-day moving average, a 2-day moving average, it's not the point of what this is a good average of anything. It just is, for whatever reason, the institutional mind of how they're investing, and they use that as a long-term benchmark of where the average should be, and they're willing to hold a stock. And as they're holding the stock, they say, you know what, if it gets to that point, we'll add to it because we know other institutions are adding too. It's the game of where are the institutions playing, where is the, you know, and that for the average investor is the most transparent line that they can use.
Yes, and you can't do the analysis you just stated without consulting a chart.
Right, exactly.
You have to see it on a chart, and what we're looking at is how does my stock behave around the 50-day moving average? That tells you a lot about strength. In fact, if you go back and look at a lot of the model book stocks, the greatest winners of the last 100 years, there's a good percentage of them that will hug that moving average going up or be very close to it, bouncing to and from above it all the way through the life of their move.
Right.
And so you got history behind what you just said.
You know, one of my favorite things to look at in terms of a pattern, and I'm sure you have a name for it, I call it something different. I call it a sock puppet. You know what a sock puppet looks like? You know, can you imagine? You know, just to kind of take your hand and kind of take your left hand and take your fingers and make it a 90-degree angle with your hand, right? Okay.
Yes.
Sock puppet. A sock puppet. And bend bend them down a little bit. Okay. Now you have a 50-day moving average that moves along, right? And let's just say that's a rising 50-day moving average. And when that intersects, that's a great point of movement for a stock, oftentimes.
Yes, preferably with some volume coming in, so you get a good quality bounce. Because ultimately, you're buying a bounce. That's why my batting average on adding in that situation is significantly higher. 3/4 of the time, it works without a problem. Whereas initiating, you know, I might be around 30, 35, 40% success rate. So there is a difference there, but that's exactly it. You get that bounce and you get some volume. That's the institutions.
Yeah. Now, Scott, how do you actually track your track record, your batting average? Do you... each trade, you say, okay, I bought this because of this, and then you kind of can look and find out what the position is? Do you have just a mental note on how it goes? How do you do that?
That's actually a critical question. Post-analysis is one of the most important tools that we can use as investors. We are not traders. We are investors, and we want to buy right, add to the right positions, and we want to sell right. And analyzing in a post-mortem fashion what we did wrong and what we did right is critical to improving our skills and ability. In fact, IBD has a workshop that dedicates probably a fourth of the day, not quite that much. Well, there's portfolio management in there too. But it's a critical, critical topic, and there's a method, and study what your decisions are, and the way to do it is whenever you make a decision in the market, hit print. Print out a weekly and a daily chart, jot down notes, not just how many shares you bought at what price, but why did you buy this stock? What were some of the other ones you liked but you passed on for this one? What was the market looking like to you at the time? What percent of your equity did you put into this commitment? And all of those questions. And then go back at the end of the year and look at how these decisions played out.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal, the learning lesson. I cannot overstate that. Very important.
Now, when you have... whatever the amount of positions that are in your portfolio, let's just make it easy. Just say 10. It doesn't matter how many, but 10 positions in your portfolio, and you're fully invested. I mean, you're fully, fully invested. Okay. And now all of a sudden another opportunity comes along and you say, that's looking pretty good. What do you do?
Well, that's when I pick up the phone and call the CFO and beg to go out on margin. But I'm sure we don't want to talk about that. So what I do is, and this is part of the portfolio management, I always rank my spreadsheet by performance of the stocks themselves, percent up. And the ones that are top of the list, I'm always trying to figure out, is there a low-risk entry to where I can add to it? And the ones at the bottom of the list, I will weed out. And if there a new idea comes along, and let's say of those 10 stocks, I'm up on all 10. I'm really lucky right now.
Right.
Okay, fine. But the bottom one is the slowest horse in my stable. So I go ahead and cut that one loose, and I bring in a new stock. So that's how I do it. But you always want your decisions to dictate your next decisions. And so... you want a decision to prove to be correct before you make another. That's a great rule of thumb, especially in a market where it can get tricky at times. And you want your winners, your leaders that are performing the best, to dictate your actions accordingly there too.
Hmm. So now let's go back to the market, Smith. And since we haven't talked a while about this, and everybody knows that it's available on multiple platforms, I will tell you, frankly, it's much easier to use on an iPad than an iPhone. Let's just state that fact, okay? Maybe younger people can do it a little bit better because they can kind of deal with those really small things. But on an iPad, it's nice to have a gigantic screen to look at. Don't get me wrong, but on an iPad, I think it's very well laid out, and you know, with the sliding things and all that, and all the things you could pull down. Now, what other things have you added recently that may be of interest?
Several refinements to the pattern recognition. Our customers really gave us good feedback. They very much like it. And of course, once they really love it, then there's some more requests. And so we've enhanced that a little bit. Really, the focus has been on the iPad versus the whole tool, and then the iPhone. And the iPad is lightning fast.
Yeah.
It's shocking to me how that much data can be pulled that fast. It's really cool sliding your finger across and just rapidly rifling through charts and seeing the story there and any articles written on it and that kind of thing. But it's a continual process.
You know, the other thing that's interesting is that you can actually that is a big issue, by the way, because I've always found, you know, we have a lot of tools that we work with here, as you know, and a lot of spreadsheets that we've built for, you know, looking at different data and all that. And, you know, getting the data fast is not fast. It's not an issue of fast, but at least reasonably efficiently is sometimes a task, you know, to grab it. And that's what's, you know, you have all your different things just right there, you know, all the numbers, all the layouts, all the things. And that's pretty cool. I know you have a trial for the Marcus Smith product.
Yeah, I can give your listeners the phone number and call in and chat with one of our technical coaches, which, by the way, everyone around here is in the market. There are no wannabes. Everyone trades stocks and loves it. It's in the blood, and you drink the water here. But marketsmith.com, and the 800 number is 800-452-4422.
And you'll talk, and actually, you have coaches, so people can help you through the whole process, which is really cool. So the outlook right now, we're in an uptrend. We had a couple of days that was stalling/distribution, nothing major though, by the way. And you know, kind of looking a little bit. But there, would you tend to agree? And I'm not saying make any statements that there's a little look of a little bit of stretched look on some securities now.
Well, yeah, we've been lifting, and so I'm expecting, you know, we could lift a little bit more, let's say Wednesday, and come in a few days. I just know that when I start to make good progress in the portfolio, I need to start peeking around the corner because there's going to be a short-term something. It's just you learn that, right?
Right, of course.
But I have to say, when I look at the NASDAQ and the S&P on a chart, and they both look, everything, it looks very constructive, and I can't explain why. You listen to the news and you want to climb under the bed and not leave your house. But the fact is, and this is where the rubber hits the road for us as investors, it's working, the stocks are working, the patterns look more elegant and symmetrical, they're not choppy and all over the place. The NASDAQ, the way it behaved around the 3,000 level, once it finally pushed through,
yep.
After multiple attempts, and then the 3,000 level immediately became a floor,
yep.
And you can see it right there, and then it lifted. Everything is acting really well. Now, you know, we could obviously, as you know, we could blow a gasket because some unforeseen event happens, and, you know, but at this point, I'm a player, I'm in. And everything looks pretty positive.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, the technology is looking great. Healthcare, by the way, has been an unbelievable surprise to me in terms of how strong it's been. You can look at a variety of different names in there from some of the pharmas, but clearly the alternative pharmaceutical companies like the Alexians or Perrigos or even some of the core pharmaceuticals, which are a little bit more of slow pokes and the kind of horses that you would shoot out of the stable that in your situation. But I mean, some of these names are, I mean, really kind of impressive moves. And then you have some of the other things like the LA Mays and the Texas Bank shares and a few others that have been just like, you know, pretty amazing, the moves that we've seen on some of these. And a lot of it, I guess, has to do with the fact that, you know, things are healing a bit, maybe not perfect, as you say, but maybe there is something around the corner that looks a little bit better than the hysteria that we've been seeing for the last 2 years.
Yeah, you know, I can't see beyond, you know, maybe fourth quarter. I'm just playing the now, here, today.
Yep.
But yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I kicked myself on that Texas Bank, TCBI. You know, I have a bias against banks. They're slower, and here's this one that just went, you know, it's been going up nicely. So be careful of preconceived ideas about stocks, but there's probably 40 to 50 that really look very good right now.
I agree. I totally agree with you.
You forgot to mention the home builders.
Well,
they look great now.
Because I have preconceived notions of that.
Well, that's because when they pull in, they always pull in 20%, so you really get a hell of a gut check.
The problem I have with the home builders, I know the charts look really great, and they've been doing very well, is if you actually look at, well, there's a couple things. If you actually look at the amount of building that they're doing, it's pathetic. It's slow. It's some of the lowest building that they've ever done. But on the other hand, they've laid off a lot of people. They're a lot leaner, so I get that, you know. But it's for whatever reason, my very strict screen, it just doesn't have home builders in there. I don't know. I got to figure out maybe why that is. It just doesn't seem to come up. But
well, you're right. You know, in the early 90s, they got hammered because they held on to all their properties and they sailed into that downturn, great guns, and they really got hurt. And so this go around, they learned, and so they were liquidating properties early. And now they're actually out scrambling trying to buy land for projects. And so, yeah, you are right, Andrew. It's kind of at the early stages. But you know what? The stocks are moving.
Oh, no question about it. Lennar is doing great. I think it hit a 52-week high last week or something like that. We see KB Homes coming out with earnings shortly and lots of amazing things. But the names, I mean, you know, if nothing else, folks, I mean, I do, and I'm just telling you seriously, the iPad version, the new iPad version, which, by the way, you finally fixed. Well, it wasn't you. It was the other side. But they finally fixed the Twitter button. You know, if this may seem like a small thing, but, you know, and I wrote in several times about this. You read an article and you want to, you know, tweet it. So I would do that, and it would kind of always fail. Well, there's a recent upgrade, I think, last week or so with the new app for the iPad, the IBD for the iPad, which, by the way, is a great. This is not yours, but this is the other side of IBD. It's nice because it's easily readable. It's, you know, flick through to what you want to read and all that. But now you can actually tweet. So I like that. But anyway, everybody, check out Market Smith. I think you'll really enjoy it. And I think that you'll be very surprised of the information that you get. It's not like looking at a Yahoo chart and then trying to click down all the different things and figure it all out. Because what happens with that is they're giving you raw numbers. Well, while you get some raw numbers with Market Smith, for example, but you get trend issues. For example, what's the quarter over quarter sales growth? What's the revenue growth? Is it slowing? Is it moving better? Is it, you know, what's the short interest ratio? What's the relative strength, which is one of the key issues that they talk about on, you know, a stock. You want to have one that has a relative strength, not the RSI oscillator, if you will, but the relative strength against other stocks. How is this performing against other stocks? Where is it in the entire universe as a sector? Are they playing well, or is it the bottom sector? Where is the whole thing happening? So you may have a great stock in a really bad sector. That may be something you want to think about. But if you have a stock that is a good stock and the sector's moving up, for example, and where was it last week? Where is it this week? It can kind of give you that heads up. It's all right there, like on one page, really easy to look at. And I think the thing that you probably we didn't mention, by the way, and I'm sorry to be doing a sales pitch. I apologize. But I do like the product. One of the things you have is the ability to do screens where you can do like a Bill O'Neill screen for stocks that he'll utilize. There's a ton of them that just come right up. And then you can just save it and sort right through all those with the flick of a finger, right?
Yes. I think an investor is only as good as their tools. And, yeah, there's plenty of free out there, but honestly, I think in the free world, you really do, in the end, get what you pay for. And this is our hard-earned money, or like I manage company money, and I need the best tools out there.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Compete on Wall Street.
I don't know how anybody deals with seriously using only the free things to research, because you don't know where you're getting your data from. And one of the big things that I have this phobia and this absolute this commitment that I get scrubbed data, right? So I know that, for example, companies like yours and the back end of your company, not even yours, but the back end of the data that flows through is scrubbed. And what I mean by scrubbed is that, you know, you're not going to find any false numbers in there or any majorly weird EPS numbers. They're going to be the true adjusted numbers, et cetera, that you should be looking at, so that you don't get thrown off base. And that's why we use only a couple different places to get our data. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, we have institutional clients that are managing billions and billions, and you don't mess up a number.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And we want to bank on that too. You know, we're managing money, and so yes, all data is not equal, and you know, the quality of the scrubbing upstream is really very important. We don't even get into talk about that much, but that whole operation is quite large.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's important. Well, I appreciate it. Scott O'Neill, the master of the Market Smith product, and not only that, great market investor. So we're not just talking theory here. We're talking reality, because his money is where his mouth is. And, of course, don't forget, he shoots the horse if it's not running fast enough. And what you got to love a guy like that. You got to love a guy like that, right?
Someone's going to get upset with that.
I'm sure.
Politically correct.
That's right. Maybe it's going to be a stewardess. No, an airline associate. Who knows? We'll see. But thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Now, if you can't get something of a little tidbit from Scott O'Neill, I mean, he is great. He has, as he says, you know, a system, a process. He does a lot of checking what he's doing before. He's disciplined, and he used that word a lot of times, disciplined in what he does. And not only that, he goes back and then looks at what were the results, when were they happening, what was the market trend, how did I do? I mean, this is great stuff. This is classic investing that is really, I mean, this is what it's all about. Now, everybody has a different way of doing things. They like more growth-oriented. Some people like a little bit more buy and hold, and they do a little more trading. Some people like a little bit more value and more diversification. But when it comes to what they do over at IBD and Investors and his firm, O'Neill and MarketSmith, man, it's just I feel great every time that I talk with him, because there's so much information that is just conveyed. And there's always something new I find out. I kind of really know him a while and spend a lot of time really digging into the whole O'Neill systems many years ago. But I got to tell you something. It's something that's really smart, and in the right environment, it works. Now, you can get caught with a real doozy here and there. You can get caught up in a market condition like 2011 that was just, you know, it didn't matter what you did. If you were in any kind of these growth stocks, you know, you would be taking all sorts of bumpy rides, you know, getting smacked around all over the place. But like I said, there is something to glean off of that. And I do encourage you to check out at least a trial of the MarketSmith. And I think it's a really cool product. I just think it is. And you know what you need to do also, when you do it, do me a favor, look at the weeklies. Take a look at the weeklies and those patterns, because those are really the interesting ones that stick out to me, whether you do it on your computer or your iPad or whatever device. It's really those patterns on theirs that are really interesting to look at, with their double bottoms, their flat bases, their saucers, cup and handles, and you know, all those different ones that really have some interesting power. And by the way, if you know why that is, if you understand, like from when we look at these, like the kind of stuff we do over at Trigger Point Research, right? There's a lot of basic principle behind why that's happening and where that is and where the supply demand is and how when supply is dropping off, when that, let's say, handle is forming, or the bottom of the second bottom, double bottom, and then all of a sudden it comes back up. There's just no more selling pressure there anymore. It's just kind of all dried up. So from there you get the short squeezes and the moves up, and it's, you know, it's kind of a great time to be long. So anyway, think about that. Stocktoberfest, do not forget. Please do me a favor. You guys are always so good at this, and I want you to make sure to get yours in, because last year we had to exclude a lot of people. We did what we could. But, you know, try to put in one. if we can get to you, we'll do your first one. And if there's some room or it's just a spectacular stock that sometimes a lot of people are duplicating, what we'll do is we will make sure to try to get it in as best as we can. Make sure this is the, last week of September, right? So there is if you haven't got that free trial of Trigger Point Research, you know what I have to say about that. You would have missed last week alone, between some of the ones that we sent out on the short and long side, you'd be sitting pretty good from 1 week. So if you want to look at, where do you buy, where do you sell, and make some quick profits. We have something else coming out. I'm not going to spill the beans right now, but for those of you that, we'll call it the slowpoke kind of style, where, I don't want to be in individual stocks that are moving and grooving and, kind of gets me a little nutty, which is exciting and this great opportunity. I want to be something a little bit more just, I'll be in, I'll be out, market time. A few other things. We have some interesting things happening there too. In the meantime, stick around for next week when David Wessel is here, and of course, listening to Frank Curzio's great show over at Stansberry Research and Stansberry Radio. I'll be on this week, and we're going to have a good time with that. I got a couple of stocks. I'm going to bring him some ideas. I'm going to bring him as well, and we always have a great conversation. So thanks for joining me. I'll see you soon. See you next week on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.